The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's just turning 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 12th of October, 2023. How are you keeping? Good morning to you all. I hope you are very well indeed and you're on board now. For the next 3 hours here in the 9 till noon show and throughout the day here on your number one local radio station, Highland Radio. Donna Marie's in the hot seat today and she's taking your calls on 07491 25000. If you want to join the conversation, we'll start your own. If you're listening from outside the Republic, 00353 7491 25000. WhatsApps and text to 08660 25000, 08660 25000. And of course, you can send your WhatsApp voice messages to that number as well. And you want to email the show, please, comments at highlandradio.com. Busy morning for newspapers today. Let's start with the Tyrconnell Tribune. John McAteer has a full budget analysis. He's entitled it "A Budget So Easily Forgotten." But elsewhere, there's anger over tree felling on Leitrim Estate as a major tree felling operation is ongoing on the Leitrim Estate near Mulroy Bay. Angry members of the community in Carrigart and Fannett says they've only become aware of the development in recent weeks. Amid this disbelief to the felling of the ancient trees, members of the community say they understand that a previous public notice seeking planning was located on a private road to Manavahan House and not visible from a public road. Locals said that at a recent notice seeking, a felling licence was posted close to a public road near Mulroy Bay in recent months. The name and address of the owner is redacted on the schedule that locals have now sourced. The paper understands that in all, 16 locations on the estate are subject to the felling licence and the overall area involved is in the region of 150 acres and a number of the licences were granted back in 2022. On to the Donegal News then. Mum due to give birth a week before eviction. A man who's facing being made homeless in Letterkenny with his pregnant wife days after she gives birth along with their three-year-old daughter has said he fears his family will not find another home. The family is one of 19 and we spoke to the mother in that family. It's one of 19 living in the Forest Ballymacool housing estate who are facing eviction. The man was told last Friday that he and his family will have to move out of their home in the first week of April. His wife Alexandra is due to give birth to their second child in the last week of March. And as I say, we spoke to Alexandra on the programme and obviously incredibly distressed and worried, especially as it comes up to Christmas. The same story on the front of the Donegal Democrat on the Derry News now. Clinuvel, the pharmaceutical company which has developed a successful treatment for the life-limiting condition erythropoietic, and apologies for not being able to pronounce that correctly, it's shortened EPP. Well, it's preparing to mount a legal challenge in the form of a judicial review against the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence. The company is also planning to issue civil proceedings against NICE in November. NICE is the organisation tasked with deciding which treatment should be available on the NHS in England. It also aims to make sure that people have the same access to treatment and care wherever they live. On to the Nationals now and the Irish Independent. Crisis hit RTE is facing a $95 million black hole in its finances, but the cash-strapped broadcaster won't say if a top executive got a golden handshake going out the door. A $40 million bailout from the taxpayer is being withheld until RTE provides a plan for delivering significant cutbacks and savings. However, a coalition TD's warning a blank cheque should not be offered to RTE. RTE will be slimmed down under a cost-cutting plan, but compulsory redundancies are being ruled out. Voluntary severance packages, a sell-off of some land at the Montrose headquarters, and the privatisation of 2FM are still on the table. However, a complete move from the Donnybrook campus is being ruled out. The shortfall in licence fee revenue since the Ryan Tubridy payment scandal could now cost RTE $61 million over the next year. Over this year and next. But the government are bailing them out. $16 million interim funding, I think, has been confirmed for RTE. That cost-cutting plan or cost-cutting plans to be published in early November. And you can be sure then that $40 million, the balance of which will be forthcoming. No such funding rush for health in this country. Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, has said that there will be a shortfall in the health budget next year. This is the Irish Times. Just a day after budget allocations were announced, Mr. Donnelly has admitted that the funding estimated by his department to be required by the health service next year was not granted in the budget. He told the Irish Times, like this year, it is entirely likely that a supplementary budget will be required next year because of healthcare inflation and patient demand. So you'd imagine at a time when clearly there's more pressure on the health service, not least because of a growing population, that the funding for the health service would go up. Now, you know, as I say, there is a feeling out there, let's not throw good money after bad and spend the money that's there more efficiently. But there's obviously, we know there's more pressure on the health service, yet there's no more money for it. The government has allocated allocated 1.1 billion supplementary estimate. It'll be brought before the Dáil this year to meet the funding shortfall for the health service this year. But a recruitment freeze is being introduced in parts of the health service to address the massive overspend in the sector. In a further cost-saving measure, there will be no dedicated funding for new drugs next year, Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly has announced. Some 162 new hospital beds will be opened next year, along with 22 critical care beds, Mr. Donnelly said at a press briefing on the health aspects of Budget 2024 yesterday. The Health Service Executive has said it expects to incur a $1.5 billion deficit by the end of the year, due mainly to inflation and increased patient demand. So there are going to be cancer patients who need drugs that won't be able to get them. There is a recruitment freeze. What does that mean in terms of services? It's so complicated and convoluted, it's hard to know. Not many beds opening there right across the country. And yet, we dig deep elsewhere. Maybe you think horse racing is really important, or greyhound racing. Agriculture Minister Charlie McConnell Ogue, he confirmed €95 million for horse and greyhound rating, the majority of which €76 million goes to the horse racing industry. And you might say, well, of course, but the horse racing industry, you know, generates, I don't know, do you feel it generates anything for you? I mean, how many cancer patients would that $76 million fund for experimental treatment? And another thing about that money too, a lot of it's used for prize money. One of the allocations, or part of the allocation a couple of years back, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm open to correction, went to prize money. It was a €2 million prize came out of this €76 million of taxpayers' money. Guess who won that prize? Because their horse won in a competition. O'Leary from Ryanair. Over €2 million of taxpayers' money, prize money from similar to this €76 million. It went into his pocket, which is remarkable, isn't it? Did you know that your money, that which was allocated from the Department of Agriculture to horse racing, $2 million of that a couple of years back, went into the pocket of Michael O'Leary because his horse won a race? It's astonishing, isn't it? But that's there you go. It's $95 million for horse and greyhound racing in total. As I say, maybe it's really important to the Irish economy, maybe further down south, but that's an awful lot of... that's quite a bit of cancer treatment, which won't be funded through the health budget. On to the Daily Mail now. And used car prices are continuing to soar, but they're not now rising at... they are now rising at their slowest rate since the start of the pandemic. Price rises have slowed as the supply of cars has been healthier in the past year and has been growing by an average of 5.4% over the past 9 months. This according to Dundeal. The report from the second-hand car website outlines that a 2007 Audi A4 cost €2,818 in September last year, but rose to over €3,023 this year. The difficulties with importing cars from Britain because of duty charges from Brexit has meant deliveries are switching to source right-hand drive cars from other countries, such as Japan. The share of imports from Britain has slumped more than 95% in 2018 to less than 27% now. Wow, that's quite a drop. I never realised it was quite as high, but this, by the time you pay all the charges bringing them over, the money is, the profit is not necessarily there. The Irish Farmers Journal. Payment for sheep farmers, land leasing reliefs, new higher funding for slurry storage, 8 million fund for tillage farmers, 5,000 euro stock relief boost. Budget 2024 provided a boost to sheep farmers with a new 8 euro ewe payment to bring the sheep improvement scheme payments to 20 euro per yo. And you can read more about that in a packed farmer's journal there. Internationally, obviously, the big story continues to be the crisis in the Middle East. Gaza was plunged into darkness as Israel yesterday stepped up its blitz of the besieged coastal strip. Waves of airstrikes destroyed high-rise buildings as the Jewish state prepared to launch a troops offensive. The lights went out as Gaza's sole power plant ran out of fuel, while water and food supplies were either cut off or running low. The collapse of the electricity grid left the 148-acre square mile strip on its knees. The Gaza Strip is tiny. 2.2 million people live there. The majority of them survive on international aid, I think about 75%. So you've got 2.2 million people in a landmass much smaller than County Donegal, and they have no gas, they have no water, they've got no electricity. Now, of course, the Gaza Strip is run by Hamas, but obviously the overwhelming majority of people in there are civilian population. And they are literally being starved out of it. It's against pretty much most, it's against the rules of war. Although Israel has declared a war, this is not compliant with the rules of engagement. The entire population is being punished. And then I read on that platform, X, Twitter, that Elon Musk is yesterday announced, just as the power, literally just as the power ran out in Gaza, he announced that all of Israel will have free access to the Tesla charges. He's a big player in the electric car market, as most of you would know. So as the power ran out in Gaza, he was announcing on his platform that Israelis would be able to charge their cars for free at his charging points. It just shows the difference in life, doesn't it? We'll be speaking about that a little later on. The Irish Daily Star, the Irish-Israeli citizen missing since Hamas attacked a music festival in Israel at the weekend, has been confirmed dead, her family revealed. Kim Damty, 22, had not been seen since the event in the south of the country near the border with the Gaza Strip. In a statement, her aunt, Pat Cooper, a sister of Kim's leash-born mother, Jennifer, said, "With heartfelt sorrow, the Cooper family announced the death of their beloved niece, Kim Damty." And you can only just imagine the terror that must have been going through those people as they were being mowed down by gunfire. Shocking stuff, really, really is. On to the Irish Daily Mirror. Irish people have more difficulty in accessing mental health services than any of the EU's other member states, a major survey revealed. Research by the European Commission also revealed we have the third highest level of experiencing an emotional or psychological problem in previous 12 months. It shows Ireland has the highest proportion of citizens claiming that either they or a family member had encountered one or more issues accessing mental health services. The Eurobarometer poll revealed 44% of Irish people had trouble in receiving treatment for a mental health issue, compared to the EU average of just 25%. So it's one in four across the EU. For us, it's almost one in two. Almost 75% of Irish citizens who encountered an issue in accessing mental health services said they faced long waiting lists or delays before a diagnosis or treatment. And there is another area that requires massive, massive spending. And maybe, and I know there was funding announced for it and so on and so forth, and I get that and I hear the words, but something is clearly, clearly amiss. We have an awful situation in this country in terms of mental health. In our region here, we're losing far too many people to suicide. That is just an absolute fact. Families devastated. Right across the county, right across the region, right across the country as well. And then you read stories saying that we are 44% of us seeking help have a greater difficulty in doing so. In Europe, it's 25% of people. 25% is way too much. We'd be crying about that. But here it's almost one in two. And people need the help. And when they come forward for help, they need to be able to access all the help that they need. Yes, there is plenty of services there for people. If you feel you need to speak to someone, Samaritans, Pieta, they're there. Someone will answer the phone and what have you. But in terms of care, long-term care evaluation, too many of us are not getting the treatment that we need. And it's the families, it's the individuals themselves, it's their families, it's their children, their partners, the wider community that are faced with this devastation that we really can't, you don't talk about it as such because it's so sensitive. And is there ever a right time? Because it seems there's always a family that's dealing with this awful situation. But we're going to have to figure something out one way or other. What we do, I don't know. Open to collaborations, open to suggestions as to what we can do on this platform to help. And very regularly on this program, we are contacted by people or their parents or guardians upset at delays in their young people, and not just young people, getting on the road legally. Learner drivers are facing huge waits, and there is an estimator which really is almost gaslighting, because it tells you a date that you're going to be invited to apply for your test, but you keep checking it and eventually you'll note that the date keeps slipping. So something really needs to be done. I think we'd all agree, as does Fianna Fáil Councillor Micheál Nochtain, who's been raising this issue. Good morning to you, Councillor. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners.
So what's your what have you been saying about this, Micheál?
Yes, Greg, you're right. I mean, basically, I've been contacted. I'm sure other local representatives have been contacted also. Basically, there's a huge waiting list in Donegal at the moment. Basically, I've been contacted by parents and young people that are waiting up to 8 months to get a test and that. And we all know, basically, that Donegal is a rural county. We don't have the same infrastructure and we don't have the same trains and that. So there's a serious issue here for young people, especially for young people going to college. And, you know, you hear basically the shortage of houses and basically the price of accommodation in the likes of Letterkenny, in Sligo and also in Derry. And a lot of these people that are applying for their tests want to drive to college and drive home. So basically it's putting a lot of pressure on families and that at the moment. And basically I called at our MD meeting that we'd write to the Minister, and if we have to get extra instructors up here in Donegal to get the backlog cleared, that's what I'm calling for, because definitely it's a matter of urgency at this stage, because if it goes on and longer, you go into next year, you're going to be people waiting over a year. That's unacceptable. Even 8 months at the moment, that's totally unacceptable for young people at this day and age, and especially for Donegal, that is a rural county.
And you mentioned public transport. Let's give a South Donegal example. Let's say someone living in Ballintra was lucky enough to secure a job at Abbott in Donegal Town, a brilliant employer, great prospects for them there. They've no way in and out unless they have a family member that will drive them in and out. They're waiting on a test. The local link is there, but it wouldn't get them in and out of work on time. There's no other real alternative for them. That's like 5 kilometres away. That's just, and that's not, say, they lived halfway up the Pettigrew Road. Do you know what I mean, Micheál? Like that would be, it would be impossible, or it is impossible, unless they have someone driving them to and from work, for young people to take up good jobs that are available there.
Totally, Greg, I agree. As you say, Ballintra is nearly on the thoroughfare, but yet, basically, the connectivity with Donegal Town wouldn't be there. And if you have to go to Pettigrew or even Glencolum, Kaler or Kilcara, that places like that, people need transport. Unfortunately, I mean, I need their car that. And unfortunately, basically, you know, there's a lot of young people and a lot of apprenticeships going at the moment, and there's a huge amount of work in around Killybegs as well. And a lot of people are going in there getting trade and learning the trade. And these young people definitely want a car to get in and out of these places. Now, even loan Killybegs, even you rightly said Donegal Town. Like, because, you know, if you're going to work, I mean, you're dependent on a family member. And, you know, we all know now, basically, the mums and dads are working as well, and they're probably gone earlier and that. So basically, it's putting a lot of pressure on families trying to get someone to bring them in or take them home and that. And that's a serious issue. But also, the big one I've been getting to, Greg, is basically it's people going to college and trying to get accommodation and want to travel, yeah, travel
100%.
Home.
No, I get you. But it's just that even the impacts on the economy in the education sector, or even when people start to work. Like, I've heard stories, and I'm sure they're true, where there's maybe one or two people conducting tests, and one of them goes on holidays and the other is on sick, for an example, and there's no tests for 2 weeks, and it pushes everything back 2 weeks. You know, and we don't know how much cold weather we're going to have, how much frost we're going to have. There's no tests often when those conditions prevail through the winter. So even someone now saying that they might get a cold for a test at the start of July next year, there's no actual guarantee at all that's when they'll actually be invited to sit their test. It's open-ended, so no one can make any plans. It's crazy.
You're 100% correct here, Greg, because definitely this is the issue that I was making. And I even called at our end meeting that basically if, you know, tests had to happen on a Saturday and Sunday, you know, to get the backlog done, well, then we should be looking at that as well. You're 100% right here. And this is the problem, that basically someone is goes off, I mean, test doesn't happen then. I mean, you know, if we even continue every day, we get through the backlog. But unfortunately, that's not happening. It might happen this week, then they're cancelled next week, and basically the and to the backlog. So basically, you know, this is a serious issue. And then basically with GDPR, us as local representatives, when we ring basically the training centre, we have to have this person beside us. And that's impossible because basically these people are working and that. So they won't give us no information on it as well. So like basically, there's a serious issue here which I mean, people are basically, you know, are standing behind covers, not taking calls from us, the local representatives, because basically we're under pressure to make sure that these people get a test and try to push it on. And whatever basically remedy has to come up with, or whatever solution has to be done, well then that has to be looked at. But definitely here in Donegal, as I said, we're a rural county and we need to basically get this backlog done as soon as possible.
What do you think, do you think there will be any action on this?
Well, definitely, I'm hoping that there is, and that, and I will keep continuing on. And I also will be talking to I mean, I put in a call yesterday to Jack Chambers' office, and that, and I will project to come back to me to highlight this as well, the minister, because basically this is a serious issue for the young people here in Donegal. As I say, basically we don't have the train service, we don't have the darts here. I mean, even we're dependent on is buses, but I mean, even at that, you don't get buses that go at the same time for everybody in all parts of the county, and it's a serious issue with that, because basically, you know, maybe they might get a bus, but they have to be up there at 7 o'clock. They're up in Sligo maybe at 8. The college doesn't start till about 8:30. And that, then basically, you know, they could finish at 4 o'clock, they have to wait till 6 maybe to get a leg back down again, and you know, and it's unacceptable for that. New people have to wait around that. And you know, if we get people out there and get instructors in there, because there is a lot of people that have retired, and if they're short instructors, well then, you know, like working in the garage and working in the civil, they can be trained up and get these basically done. A lot of driving testers out there as well that could go in and basically work part time to get these tests done, because the backlog at the moment is totally unacceptable.
Yeah, and it also, there must be questions asked as to the allocation of new testers. I mean, new testers were hired. I think it was the gentleman you mentioned earlier, Jack Chambers, the minister, he announced in April there were 75 new testers and said they required 2 months training, right? So we're well past that now. I mean, are we getting any of these new testers into the Northwest or into Donegal more specifically, I wonder?
Well, exactly, Jack. And this is the question that we're asking here. I mean, and if not, we definitely want them in here, and definitely want extra ones in here for the time being to get the backlog done. That's what I'm requesting, that we get extra driving instructors into Donegal to clear up the backlog, and then basically, you know, that we keep a steady flow of instructors here in the county, because basically, as I keep saying this, it's a rural county. I mean, and we're dependent more on cars in this county than any other county in Ireland.
All right, well, maybe you might give us an update if you get a response from Minister Chambers, because there's an awful lot of people listening would be very interested in that. But for now, thank you very much indeed. That's Fianna Fáil Councillor Micheál Nochtain there, 086 60 25000. My girlfriend has been on a waiting list now for a driving test for over a year. She has started college and has no other choice but to drive. Do guards expect people not to take the risk? It's ridiculous we have to wait this long. And, I mean, no one could condone that, obviously, because it's illegal activity, and the penalties are quite harsh. You could, I think it's 5 points, is it, for driving? Your car can be seized and what have you. And that's going to affect your insurance. But this person says that she's at college and feels that she has no other choice, waiting over a year for a test. All right. We are speaking now to Councillor Donald Mandy Kelly. Good morning, Donald. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all your listeners.
It's good to have you with us. You've raised the issue of the need for car parking facilities at the Bridle Path entrance to Glenveagh National Park. Describe the current setup for us, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that's right, Greg. As a motion moved on Tuesday at our municipal district meeting. Well, anybody, I suppose a lot of people familiar with the area I'm talking about, it's on the Loch Barra side or Glendone side of the Bridle Path there that leads down into the Glenveagh Castle. And I suppose at the minute, Greg, there's only really realistically room for two, maybe three cars max there. And, you know, this is a fantastic scenic area, a fantastic walk right down into Glenveagh Castle. And at the minute, you know, that has become a very busy road from Glendone right down under Loch Barra, Duhery, and on to Dunlow. And it also sees, I suppose, kind of heavier vehicles that as years go on as well. And, you know, the situation at the minute there, Greg, is that the road is very narrow. Cars, when tourists or visitors are coming to do the bridle pass, they're having to actually park along the roadside. And I have seen in some cases that, you know, that it has actually blocked the road where bigger vehicles couldn't get through. So that's the reason that I have moved the motion this week and asking that now Donegal County Council engage with the OPW to construct a new car park in off the road there, the Bridle Path, where tourists or visitors or even locals can come, you know, can park their car in a safe environment and go and do their walk, because, you know, it is a fantastic walk, as I say, and it does take a fair bit of time. So what I'm looking for is when people can park there, they can park safely and they can go and enjoy the walk without having to rush back or worry, is their vehicle on the road or is it blocking somebody else, you know, etc., you know.
Yeah, and just for those who may not know, Donald, why would someone not use the car parks that are available at Glenveagh?
Well, you see, Greg, you can use the car park that's available in Glenveagh, and there is a bus that takes you right out by Glendone and right out to Guibara or Rothbara there for the bridle path. That is an option. But, you know, people I have been talking to, the biggest majority of them want to park on the Lawbara side of the bridle path and walk right down into Glenveagh Castle and do the walk back again. You know, and at the minute, that option, it's not really feasible because there's no car parking available. And people's worried that, you know, I done the walk myself, my wife and her son in the summertime, you know, and it's a fantastic walk, but it does take a few hours to go down and come back in again, you know. And, you know, I myself was worrying, you know, is my car parked okay, you know, for this length of time? Am I blocking anyone? I'm not blocking the road. So I think it's important, you know, when we have such a walk on our doorstep, Greg, it's important that we publicise it and promote it in the best way possible. And I think if we construct a car park there, it will entice more people to come and park and do the walk, because I have been made aware too of situations where tourists have came, they've realised there's no parking there and they've actually turned and gone away, you know, and that's something I don't want to see happening, you know.
What's the situation in terms of land? Would land have to be acquired? Would they have to work with, you know, national parks, or realistically, Who owns the property? Is there council land available there? And how many car parking spaces do you think could realistically be provided?
Yeah, well, Greg, I suppose to start with, you know, Donegal County Council has recognised that the parking is an issue at this location. And, you know, the area is designated as a special area of conservation. You know, and any significant development would require a Natura impact statement at a minimum, you know, or outside Fulton. You know, the OPW and Glenveagh National Park as kind of owners of the land there. But there's one thing, Greg, that I can point out there. You know, back maybe, say, 500-600 yards down the road, there's actually what was at one time a chip bed there where stone and that was left, you know. And I don't see any reason why we couldn't expand that and turn it into a car park. You know, if it could only facilitate 10, 15 cars, I think it would be a fantastic job, you know. And as I say, it would entice more people to come to the area. But listen, Donegal County Council has recognised my motion. They have took it on board. And I've asked that they seek every avenue possible to try and secure funding. So, listen, they did come back to me on the day and state that they are willing engage with the OPW and any other avenue that needs to be explored to try to seek funding to have a car park constructed. So, listen, it's positive, Greg, and something I will be keeping an eye on, because I feel, especially here in Donegal, I mean, it's a fantastic county we have here with a wide Atlantic Way and with so much to offer, but it's important that we have the proper facilities such as parking in place for everyone to explore and enjoy it in the best way possible.
All right. Listen, thanks for your time this morning. That's Councillor Donald Mandy Kelly there, 086 60 25,000, if you agree or, for that matter, disagree. Greg, the Portaloos in the town park in Letterkenny are not good enough. Only for duns and pennies. There are no others. Small children and the elderly should not have to use the Portaloos, which typically smell very bad. I don't get it. Well, there are plans afoot, if I'm not mistaken, for the provision of public toilets there. A caller says only one councillor turned up to the defective block meeting in the Station House Hotel, and that was Councillor Michael McBride. It was so disappointing that our representatives weren't in attendance. I'd like to thank him for his comments on the night. A few more here. We could all be in business with all the subsidies they're getting. If a business isn't sustainable, it should be allowed to fail, says the listener. Another plumber's rate per hour is €60. Bring in more people into the country who have a trade and stop this price gouging. I think people, we've had a couple of comments about plumbers and electricians in the past about how much they charge. It's very highly skilled and regulated, often part of the economy here. And you can pay a tenner for someone to come in. I'm sure there'll be people that do that for you. But what kind of a job would they do for you? And how would they stand over that? Greg, it's only hands out to keep people quiet. This is more reaction from the budget. And suppress people with a mess the country's in. The government destroyed this lovely little country, they say. Others obviously would disagree with those comments. We were talking to Paddy Boney yesterday. Sorry for saying so much. Because what happens is I glance down to make sure that, or to try and make sure that the comments are on the same issue. But sometimes I need that little to make sure I know what I'm talking about here. Casement Park will host Euro 2028 games. How things have changed. It's a great pity that some politicians in the north are still unwilling to share power and indeed block any spending on that development. I was stopped by customs at a checkpoint on the Newtown Road. I was coming from Derry. I had 4 drums of heating oil in the car. They took it off me. I thought I was allowed to take it out for my own use, but was told I'm not allowed to bring any oil out. Well, this is like a flashback to my childhood. So does that mean the same for other fuels? Coal, for an example. What about petrol? Is that this caller, they had that experience. They were stopped by customs at a checkpoint on the Newton Road. They were coming in from Derry. They had 4 drums of heating oil in the car and it was taken from them. Has anyone else experienced anything like that? Please let us know. 086 60 25,000. A caller says a new road was made into the Polestar roundabout. Where can an ambulance get through in an emergency to get to hospital? Who was the brains behind that? There is some concern, and I've heard it before, if you're talking about the concrete centre margin there, that it could hinder emergency vehicle access. I'm not really quite sure. I think there is still quite a bit of space for cars to pull, but we'll have to wait and see. If anyone is in the ambulance trade, by the way, and I know you listen to us, give us an off-the-record text if you have any concerns about access to the hospital with the new 4 lanes layout. This listener's grandchild is severely autistic. The family has had no help whatsoever from CDNT. She's not had speech therapy or physiotherapy since before COVID. The only help she has received is either at home or at school, where the staff are brilliant. The child is non-verbal and does not eat without assistance. When her mother applied through the social welfare for support about 6 years ago, the application was nothing short of a book. And now, 6 years on, she's received another form to fill out, which they're saying is a review that needs to be completed. Why do they need to review the needs of an autistic child, needlessly putting the family through more stress? For what purpose, they ask? So being asked to jump through hoops and form filling, and in 6 years, no CDNT services for that child. Will the Irish government be contributing to the redevelopment of Casement Park for Euro 28? It could become a white elephant in West Belfast, only drawing a crowd on Ulster final day. Not very accessible to Donegal fans. And when the Wolftones play at Fail in a Fubble, why not build a stadium for all sports and for it to be used for concerts for all communities? A few people actually have come in with that comment as well. A couple on health here now. My mother was 71. And was a kidney transplant patient. She waited 8 hours in the Letterkenny Hospital's emergency department. When she did get a bed, she had a stroke in her sleep. I always associated that stroke with her wait in ED and waiting to be seen. She died 4 months later. and I accept nothing will bring her back, but it's so sad nothing is changing. If anything, the department is getting worse, and I'm so sorry for your loss. And any loss is difficult, but then when there are things that you think that may have contributed to it, whether they did or not, it can make the grieving process much more difficult. A caller says, again, ED will continue to be under pressure until CHO1 address the issue of community services to provide a pathway out of hospital. Years ago, a GP used to run a Saturday morning clinic, as Paddy Rooney said on the programme this week. We have well-trained and experienced GPs who could be utilising their skills. Why don't they work in collaboration with after hours? Again, Letterkenny has 239 acute beds, adult acute beds, with over 150 people accessing ED every day. Don't the maths, or do the maths, it doesn't add up. Where was the provision in the budget? Well, we talked about the provision for health in the budget, and it's not where it needs to be, I think. On Facebook, Sean says, Greg, any idea on the prices for completing the new ATV training courses in Ireland? Thanks. Well, I can't actually see the prices right in front of me. I have seen some prices ranging between €200 and €500, but leave it with me. I will find that out for you. Now, Conor Pope is a consumer affairs correspondent from the Irish Times and is with us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Conor.
Hi, how are you getting on?
Good to have you on. Right, okay. Now, tell us the new TV show that you're involved with, and I suppose how Donegal people in the broader northwest can get involved.
Yeah, well, listen, the key thing in what you just said is how your listeners can get involved. So I want to stress that whatever I say here, I'm kind of relying on the participation of your listeners. So basically, the programme is going to be broadcast on RTE in the new year. And it's going to feature Owen McGee, the financial planner and TV presenter, as the taskmaster. And he's going to give myself, Amy Malloy, social affairs correspondent with the Irish Independent, and Siobhan Maguire, a consumer journalist and podcaster, also with the Irish Independent, the job of fixing consumers' problems. Mm. And there are so many of them out there, as you well know. So these problems could be anything from being given the runaround by a bank or a telecoms company, or having a broadband provider let you down, or have an airline hold on to your money unfairly or unjustly, or anything else out there that is causing a consumer concern. And the idea behind the programme is Owen will give us these problems and we will go off and fight the corner of the people who have those problems and hopefully get a resolution. So that's the essence of the programme. And I think it's a reflection of what so many consumers need. Because I've been doing this in the Irish Times effectively for donkey's years. And what really dispirits me is that no matter how often we highlight failings of companies, those failings persist. And they're absolutely pervasive across our society. So it's like companies are putting obstacles in the way. They want to make it difficult for us to get resolution. They want to stop us getting the redress that we deserve. And sometimes you just have to stand up and say, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore, and fight back. And that's what we want to do on behalf of your listeners.
Yeah, but as you say, sometimes the complaint mechanisms are designed to frustrate to the point where you just say, stuff it and give up. You know yourself, if you're looking to engage or buy a product, the phone's answered straight away. You're looking for a little bit of customer support. Often you have to press a button a million times before you're told to, you have to email or something along those lines. It's kind of, I mean, it's good to hear the some of the worst offenders being called out on this, because, as I say, it is naturally designed to be to frustrate. And then the human condition is we tend to give up.
That's exactly right. And I'm glad you say that, because I think that's built into the business models of too many of these companies, that they say, listen, we just want new business. Once we get that business in, we don't really care that much about our existing customers. And it used to be like this. It used to be different. You used to have this notion of customer care where businesses would pride themselves on looking after the existing customers. And what baffles me is that it actually costs more to bring in new customers than it does to retain your existing customers. So if the companies were just better at looking after the people they have, there wouldn't be this churn. There wouldn't be this constant changing of our switching, although it's not as constant as it should be. But the bottom line is that businesses make it difficult. And as you say, every time you call, they say, oh, yeah, our phone lines are very busy. It's like, well, then employ more staff. Or
empower your staff to do a better job at fixing problems in the first instance.
But so Conor, just in relation to that, I mean, maybe we're getting better at it now, but, you know, we're incredibly brand loyal in this country. I mean, you'll have people that's with the same broadband provider and they'll almost proudly tell you for 20 years or 25 years, yet, you know, they could save a fortune if they switched, or it could be the same with car insurance or house insurance or whatever it might be. And I think maybe we are getting a little bit better at switching, thanks to the likes of yourself and others who promote that type of stuff. But if more of us voted with our feet, or maybe the markets are too small that we end up going back to the same people, but if more of us voted with our feet when we weren't happy with our customer service, then maybe they would all have to up their game somewhat.
100%. But the difficulty is that sometimes it can be really hard to make those changes. Like, if, like, sometimes, like, there's a reason why less than 1% of the market, generally speaking, will change bank every year. And it's not because all of the banks are doing a sterling job. It's because people perceive it as being really complicated to change your bank. There's a reason why more than 70% of the market never change the health insurance. It's because there's more than 300 different health insurance policies on the market, and people are put off and frightened by the complexities of the market. And so an awful lot of the time, people, the way the businesses are structured are working against the best interests of consumers. But the answer to that is to be more proactive and to be more empowered and say, listen, I'm not going to accept this. But there was an example, it's going back 10 or 12 or 15 years now, when Ulster Bank, you remember this, Ulster Bank effectively for weeks stopped functioning as a bank. There was huge problems with the bank. People couldn't get their money lodged. It was a massive issue, and you know, and it was all stemming from the bank's UK parent company. So it was a computer glitch that just went on and on and on. Now, you would have thought after that scenario that there would have been an awful lot of people saying, right, I'm going to switch my banking to another bank. Very few people did. And that's because of that sense of passivity that exists out there, that people are just reluctant to do it. But the essence of it is that too often people are let down by businesses, and too often people are let down by service providers. And that's what this program wants to do. It wants to say, OK, if you're going to let down your customers, we're going to highlight your failings on the television. We're going to get redress for your customers, the ones that are contacting us. And we're going to show other people that the frustrations that they're experiencing are not unique and they're not alone, and that something needs to be done. And I don't want to be too optimistic, but I would like to think that a program like this might be able to make some minor changes to how businesses do business. And if they say, oh God, we don't want a feature on this program, so maybe we'll up our game just a little bit. Now, maybe that's wishful thinking on my part, but I think it would be good if that would be the outcome of the program. But as I said at the outset, we do need your listeners' help, because we do need the stories that your listeners have to tell. And I know that almost every single person listening to this program now will have a story to tell of how they've been let down. And some of those stories will be ongoing, and some of the people who are listening now will be mired in dealing with a big company, or indeed a small company, because it's not just about the big service providers. It can be about a builder. It can be about a bloke who installs Windows. It can be about a scam that you've fallen victim to. Anything that you feel that we could help with, we'd like to hear your story.
All right, okay. So that covers pretty much anything consumer related. So people can email consumer@indiepix.ie. That's IndiePix.ie with your story, and obviously include your contact details. Conor, listen, thanks for that. When do you know? Obviously, the turnaround on something like this is probably going to be pretty quick. When are you hoping to, or do we know when it's going to air?
Well, it'll probably be in the new year, so okay. in the early spring kind of time is when we're looking to broadcast it.
All right, thanks very much indeed, Conor. Excuse me, Conor Pope, the consumer affairs correspondent from the Irish Times. He's working with Anne Molloy and Siobhan Maguire. If you have a feeling you've been ripped off, scammed, and you feel you've nowhere else to turn, consumer@indiepix.ie. And we know from the work we do on this show, there are an awful lot of people out there. And unfortunately, it takes going to the media often to get a resolution. A caller says, Greg, how often should we be switching? Well, my internet, as soon as the contract is about to come to an end, my phone, wherever, anytime you're about to come towards the end of your contract, start looking around your insurance, price around your insurance every single year, price around your broadband. If you keep switching broadband, effectively you will eternally pay €35 because those are the offers out there. So switch around, keep switching. a lot of people then go from 35 to 60 and they go, oh, well, stuff it, you know, it works quite well and I don't want to post the modem back, do so. I'm sure you'd prefer to have that €25 in your pocket every single month. And often even just threatening to switch will in and itself save you money. Some of the big providers that you can speak to on the phone, like Sky, for an example, they don't want you to leave. If they your contract is coming up, ring them. Say you're about to leave. You'll be surprised. Often you can save some money. All right, back with more after the news and obituary notices.